The man could outshout a jet turbine.
I'm trying to save people's lives here, Skelly said.
Busy auburn eyebrows lowered in all seriousness.
Your company, too!
Seeing Lal return her attention to the electronic manifest in her four-fingered hands, Skelly turned around and shrugged.
No one listens!
Kanan knew Skelly worked as a demolitions expert for Dalborg, one of the other mining concerns. Okadiah had explained that Skelly had been fired by every major firm in the last 5 years. The only one Skelly hadn't yet landed with was Kanan's employer. It wasn't too small a firm, Okadiah had said. Just lucky. Kanan agreed. Skelly knew what he was doing with a demolition charge, but a variety of neuroses came with the package, and he always looked as if he'd slept on the floor. Even when Kanan did that for real, he made sure he looked presentable. Skelly turned to face the Moonglow chief.
Look, Lal, all you have to do is suspend blasting past Zone 42. You and the other firms, just for a while. Long enough for me to test my...
Lal looked at him in disbelief.
I thought you said you were giving up.
Skelly's small eyes narrowed.
You'd like that, right? I forgot. All you guild outfits are the same. Out for yourselves!
Kanan tried to tune it out as he pushed his palate past.
Coming through.
Lal, clearly pleased to have someone other than Skelly to talk to, looked down at the load Kanan was hauling and checked it against her manifest.
Glad you made it, Kanan. I heard there was some trouble out there.
No concern of mine, Kanan said, parking the hovercart. Here's your bombs.
This batch goes to Zone 42,
Lal said, waving some workers over. She nodded to Skelly, who smoldered as he stared at the hovercart.
Someone's favorite place, she whispered.
Skelly leaned on the hovercart handle.
I told you we can't keep blasting down there. Not with these...
Take 'em home, then, Kanan said, walking around Skelly. Blow yourself up.
He began to unload crates of explosives one at a time for the workers to carry away.
Wait,
Skelly said, finally noticing the freighter pilot. He stepped beside Kanan and looked back at Lal.
You'll listen to Kanan, right? He's one of your top explosive haulers, and one of my best friends.
Right on one, wrong on the other, Kanan said, continuing his job.
Kanan flies with this stuff. He knows what it can do. He'll tell you. Using microblasts to cut crystal is one thing, but you shouldn't use it to crack open walls. He knows!
I'll tell you what I know, Kanan said, turning and poking a finger in Skelly's sternum, knocking him back a step. I have a deadline. I've got more to unload. So long.
He returned to the empty cart and turned it around. Lal stepped aside to take a call.
Imperial Channel,
she said, waving Skelly off.
This is important.
This is important, too,
Skelly muttered to no one. Seeing Kanan pushing the hovercart away, he started marching after him. Catching up, he tried to match the pilot's pace.
Kanan, pal, why didn't you back me up over there?
Get lost, will you?
Lost is what we'll all be if this keeps up,
Skelly said, huffing and puffing.
I know what the Baradium family of explosives can do, better than anyone. I've done the yield estimates. I've even studied the seismology of this moon.
You must be fun on holidays,
Kanan said, pushing the cart back into the elevator.
Right down to what they never consider, the core.
Skelly kept talking as he pushed his way into the car with Kanan.
It's sturdy up here, but way down deep, this moon could snap like a protein cracker. He's right. I knew it. You agree with me.
No. Food reminded me,
Kanan said, drawing a pouch from his jacket.
I skipped breakfast.
I'm serious,
Skelly said, reaching into his own vest. He wore a single glove over a right hand that Kanan had never once seen him use, except as a pincer. There was something gripped in it now, not much larger than a coin.
It's all on this hollow disk. I've got my work right here. You know those ground quakes we get on Gorse when the moon passes close by? The only reason it isn't worse on Cinda is because the crystal formations keep the tension in check. But we keep blowing them apart. If I can get just one person to read this...
Why does it have to be me? I'm nobody.
Everybody comes to Okadias, Skelly said. You're there all the time! You can talk to people!
Why can't you?
Kanan knew why.
Oh, yeah. He banned you for aggravating people.
Just have a look.
Skelly waved the disc before Kanan.
Get it out of my face, Skelly. I'm serious.
Kanan threw his food pouch to the deck of the pallet. Pushing back against workers for other firms always caused a hassle. Okadiah had warned him against it, but Skelly was friendless, and for good reason. Kanan was near his limit. Skelly's face twisted into a disdainful snarl.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot. You're paid by the shipload, right? And now you're all going to be running like escrats because the Empire's dropped by.
He got in the taller man's face.
Well, the Empire had better watch out, or it's going to have a real disaster on its hands.
Last warning.
Skelly opened his mouth again, but before a syllable emerged, Kanan's fist slammed into Skelly's teeth. 5 seconds of violence later, the elevator doors opened to the landing bay, where waiting loader droids saw Kanan pushing the pallet with Skelly's crumpled body atop it.
Good, you're here, Kanan said. He shoved the cart at them. Put this somewhere.
As Kanan headed back to Expedient for another load, a dazed and flustered Skelly looked up at the puzzled droids.
Nobody listens!
Chapter 4
I have a ping on Cinda, Cam 560, the operator in the second row said. Threat to the Empire and spoken basic. Elevator cam. 38 decibels, clearly intoned.
Across the crowded data center, Zaluna Miter didn't look up from tending to her plants.
Who was listening?
A transport driver.
And us?
Zaluna thought to herself as she turned back to business. Her gray hand swept at the air in front of her, and a new half-meter-tall hologram appeared on one of the display platforms surrounding her work dais. Hundreds of thousands of kilometers above Gorse, a couple of people were having a conversation in one of the lunar mining station's elevators. Or they had been having a conversation, until one person had decked the other. And it was all unfolding again, seconds later, in three static-laced dimensions in front of Zaluna's enormous black eyes. Focusing on the moving image, the Sullustan woman reached for this hour's mug of calf. Now in her 50s, Zaluna spent an hour each day in the corporate gym, but she still knew it was past time to do without the artificial stimulant. On the other hand, her work had only gotten busier, and the calf was the only vice she'd ever had. She knew for certain that fact put her in the distinct minority of Gorse's residents, because in the last 30-plus years, Zaluna Miter had seen and heard everything. She had to. It was her job. And in the earpieces plugged into her giant, shell-like ears, she heard the words that had caught the system's attention.
The Empire had better watch out.
She glanced down at the terminal operator in the second row.
The listener was a transport driver, you say? Anybody we...
Migrant, no record, he replied. Nobody we care about.
Zaluna didn't need to ask whether the speaker was someone they cared about. His words alone were enough. The surveillance supercomputers had comprehended the statement, measured it against mysterious metrics, and kicked the incident up to the Minox, who'd taken it to her. Miter's Minox. That was what the shift on her floor was named after she rose to supervise it. She had no children or grandchildren. She hadn't needed any other family, ever. Standing here on her platform, she was queen, lending her guidance to the surveillance operators and taking the occasional spare moments to tend to her potted plants. She'd had the misfortune to be born onto a world where the sun never rose, but at least her office had full-spectrum lighting. Zaluna had been a fixture since her late teens here in World Window Plaza, the upside-down and truncated cone that was still the newest building on Gorse. Transept Media Solutions had built the structure, which had no windows at all, as a local repository for marketing data about the planet's residents. There wasn't much commerce on Gorse, unattached to the mining industry, but that didn't matter. When people did leave, they took their purchasing preferences with them. And thanks to the monitoring stations it maintained, Transept would have their profiles when they arrived elsewhere. That information was surely worth something. Although who'd want it or why was a subject Zaluna rarely considered. Few people apart from poor transient laborers left Gorse anymore, but that wasn't a concern. First the Republic, and later the Empire had become Transept clients, and Zaluna had kept her dream job, watching and listening. That was what she'd been born to do. Not because of her giant Sullustan eyes and ears, though they missed nothing, but because as long as she could remember, she had loved to observe and absorb information. And neither did Zaluna forget anything.
Our old friend,
she said aloud, as her finger movement brought the holographic image to a halt.
Skelly, no surname. Human, born Corellia, 40 standard years ago. Demolitions expert, Dalborg Mining, Sinden operation. Last known address, Crispus Commons on Gorse. Clone Wars veteran, injured, hand replaced, 2 teeth missing.
The operator in the second row looked back at her, amused.
That's him, Heto said. But I haven't even pulled up the file yet.
You did 8 days ago,
Zaluna said, sipping from her mug.
No need to tell me twice.
You're scaring me, boss.
Laughter came from along the lines of desks.
You could use a good scare, Heto. Back to work, all of you.
The operators hushed immediately, and Heto smiled and turned back to his terminal.
Over 2 decades, she'd watched his youthful brashness turn into jaded irascibility. But he still relished getting a rise out of her. Zaluna had never expected to command a room of any kind. The diminutive Sullustans, at just over 1.5 meters, Zaluna was taller than most, were one of the least threatening peoples on Gorse, a world where folks did a lot of threatening. Long before she had been promoted to her superior position, Heto had taken to walking her to and from her tough neighborhood. She appreciated the gesture, but in fact she faced danger gamely. Theft on Gorse was a constant, like the groundquakes that rocked the world. You might get knocked down now and again, but you simply had to get back up. It had started before the Empire, under the Republic. The Minox had been tasked with screening electronic communications and certain monitored public places for conversations suspected to pose a threat to the lives of Republic citizens. As the Clone Wars had dragged on, the lives of Republic citizens had evolved into Republic security, and under the Empire, that phrase had morphed into public order.
No matter,
Zaluna had thought.
They're just words.
She never had a problem with listening to those of others for a good cause. The mining business attracted a lot of rowdies, yes, but worse things grew in darkness. It was smart for law enforcement authorities to use the latest tools to keep tabs on miscreants. And there was no shortage of things to listen for. During the Clone Wars, the Separatists had hatched many plots against the Republic. Watching out for them was just common sense. Even the Republic's supposed defenders, the Jedi, had turned traitors. If you believe the Emperor's account. She wasn't sure she did.
but she was fairly certain that if there was a plot, then someone like Saluna had probably first flagged it. Privacy? In her younger days, Zaluna had found it a silly concept. Either thoughts were in your head, or you let them out. The only distinction between a whisper and an intergalactic broadcast was technical. A listener with the means to hear had the absolute right to do so. Really, the obligation to do so. Else the act of communicating was a futile one. Zaluna didn't speak her mind nearly as often as Heto. But when she had something to say, she definitely wanted people to listen. But times had changed. Under the Empire, words had become causes with greater effects. People she'd monitored had disappeared, although she'd never found out why. And the job had ceased to be as much fun. Skelly's frozen image lingered there before her. His mouth stuck open mid-rant. It seemed a perfect pose, and she knew she'd see it again. Because Skelly, she knew, was red-stamped. Records digitally stamped with a red star indicated visits from Gorse's mental health authority.
"He gets any more stars, he can open up his own galaxy," she said.
She took a deep breath, relieved. Red-stamped people tended to stay in the medical system, rarely escalating to anything else. They were freer with words than most, rarely intending action. And Skelly had been fun to listen to in the past, at least. She unpaused the feed.
"That's that, then. I'll close out the..."
"Incoming message," Heto said, speaking abruptly. "The official channel."
"That doesn't happen every day," she thought. "Put it through."
A macabre form appeared holographically in the space before the brown-clad supervisor. His mechanical voice spoke precisely and clearly.
"This is Count Vidian of the Galactic Empire, speaking to all surveillance stations under my authority. I am launching inspections of mining operations both on Cinda and at the processors on Gorse. All such locations are now under Security Condition 1. No exceptions."
Zaluna gawked at the life-size figure.
"Excuse me? All the mining operations? Are you aware how many..."
Count Vidian did not wait to hear her finish. The transmission ended. Heto spoke first, as always.
"What the hell?"
"Yeah,"
Zaluna said under her breath. Then she let out a whistle. The mining trade employed tens of thousands of people.
"Is he serious? Does he even know what he's asking for?"
Heto threw up his hands.
"Maybe we need to get a red stamp for that guy's file. I swear, some of these impies must be out of their minds. That are..."
"Heto!"
Zaluna snapped. Except for the low murmur of audio feeds coming from the monitors, the room fell silent. More quietly this time, she said,
"We do what we're told."
Zaluna traced her jowls with her fingertips as she tried to remember the last time SecCon 1 had been invoked. It hadn't happened since the Emperor first drafted Transept into Imperial service to deal with the Jedi crisis. It meant escalating every case under watch to the highest level. And Zaluna had a sense of what that meant. It was nothing good. Her eyes had returned to the live feed of Skelly on Cinda. The connection she had been about to close without action.
"Bump him up, Heto."
"But he's a red stamp."
"Which counts for nothing today."
The supervisor straightened.
"Whatever his condition, Master Skelly's mouth is going to earn him some time with our friends in white. And good luck to him then,"
she thought.
Chapter 5.
"Count Vidian, this is an honor,"
gushed the tall, cape-clad Nymoidian, waiting at the bottom of the Imperial shuttle's landing ramp. Despite the short notice, every firm working the moon had sent someone to the party meeting cudgel, and the director's big red eyes practically beamed with pride.
"The Sindon Mining Guild welcomes you,"
he said,
a wide, thick-lipped smile on his noseless green face.
I'm Director Polfa. We've all heard so much about...
Spare me,
Vidian snapped, and half the listeners on the cavern floor took a step back, unnerved.
I have a schedule, and so do you, when you bother to keep it.
The director's throat went dry.
Of course.
The others averted their eyes, afraid to stare at the cyborg. Good, Vidian thought. In the waning days of the Republic, Vidian's management texts had become pop culture hits, despite, no, because of his reluctance to appear on the business holonets. He wasn't shy or ashamed of his appearance, he just didn't like wasting his time. But while the mystique added to his public reputation, in person, his physical presence was a large part of his managerial success.
The turnaround expert,
he had written,
is a germ invading the body corporate. It will be opposed.
Whenever someone sought to make over an organization, entrenched bureaucrats always tried to intimidate him. But two could play that game, and Vidian had been winning for 15 years. The legend of Denetrius Vidian had started 5 years before that, on what doctors expected would be his deathbed. But he'd survived, spending his bedridden time turning his meager bank balance into a fortune through electronic trading. In time, he purchased expensive, high-tech prosthetics, crafted to his own specifications. He did not look like other humans, but then humanity had abandoned him first, leaving him to rot in that hospice. So Vidian had optimized his physical features in keeping with his now famous trinity of management philosophies.
Keep moving. Destroy barriers.
See
everything.
Simple rules, which he diligently applied at every opportunity, including now, as the coterie made for the elevators.
The tour you ordered will cover some distance,
the director said.
Would your lordship like to rest first?
No,
Vidian said, marching so quickly the others had trouble keeping up. He moved faster now than ever he had in his youth. Physical age no longer mattered. Some joked that Vidian was half droid, but he knew the comparison was inapt. Droids shut down. Vidian had spent too many years lying around already, so he had compounded his successes by working 90% of every day.
Keep moving. With an able body, the mind can achieve anything.
Leading Vidian from the elevator onto a lower floor, the director paused in his blather about Cinda's wonders.
I'm sorry,
he said, presenting his comlink.
Would you like to call your vessel to report your arrival?
I just did, while you were prattling in the elevator,
Vidian said. Polfa seemed puzzled. He hadn't seen or heard Vidian do anything. The Count had installed a variety of comlink receivers into his earpieces. By routing his artificial voice through them, he regularly placed calls without ever appearing to open his mouth. Vidian hated getting information from intermediaries, who often distorted things for their own reasons. His communication capabilities were just one more way of cutting out the middle.
Destroy barriers. Get information directly, whenever possible.
This chamber leads to one of our mining levels,
the director said, gesturing to the workers hurrying around.
What you're seeing is a typical day here.
A lie,
Vidian said, continuing to walk.
I'm reading the live feed from your reports as I speak. You've doubled your pace, but will return to mediocrity when the Empire turns its eyes away. Be assured, I will see it does not.
A rumble came from the group of mining company representatives around them, but there was no point in their arguing. With a vocal command that made no external sound, Vidian cleared the daily production reports from his visual receptors. Years earlier, He'd realized how leaders, from floor managers to chief executives, were often blind to the basic circumstances around them. Vidian didn't want to miss a detail. His optical implants not only gave him exceptional eyesight, but also eliminated the need for vid monitors by projecting external data feeds onto his own retinas.
See everything. He who has the data has the upper hand.
Vidian looked back at the group of worried mining officials. Many were out of breath from trying to keep up with him, including a Besalisk woman. There were several of the multi-armed humanoids working at the Kalkaron Depot, his administrative hub, members of a reasonably industrious but otherwise unremarkable species. But before he gave her a second thought, freight elevators opened on either side of the chamber. Stormtroopers rushed from the cars.
Right on time.
Vidian pivoted and pointed to five different corridors leading from the chamber. Without a word in response, the squad split up and headed into the tunnels. Director Palfa was startled.
What's going on?
No more than I said.
Vidian's tone was as casual as his meaning was ominous.
You are managers. We're helping you manage.
Hera wasn't about to bring her ship into the Sindon mining complex for an unauthorized landing. Joining the convoy, however, had gotten her close, and once out of sight of the Star Destroyer, she'd parked in orbit. Her ship's small excursion vessel had taken her the rest of the way to a little maintenance outbuilding on the surface. She'd studied just enough about the mining trade to know what to pretend to be. A maintenance tech for bulk loader droids. The rest she'd thought up on the spot.
This is the wrong entrance,
the guy inside the airlock had said.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. It's my first day, and I'm late.
And where's your badge?
I forgot. Can you believe it? My first day.
The man had believed it, letting her pass with a smile that said he hoped she'd keep making wrong turns in the future. People of several different species found Hera appealing to look at, and she was happy to put that to use for a good cause. But as she walked carefully through the mining complex, she increasingly realized how difficult that cause had become. Gorse and Cinda produced a strategic material for the Empire, yes, but they were well away from the Galactic Center. And yet, Hera spied one surveillance cam after another, including several that the workers clearly weren't intended to see. If Coruscant-level security had made it out to the Rim Worlds, that would make any action against the Empire all the more difficult.
Another good reason to visit my friend on Gorse after this, she thought, darting lithely beneath the viewing arc of another secret cam.
A rendezvous with any mystery informant was dangerous. She'd learned that quickly enough in her short career as an activist. But her contact had proven knowledge of Imperial surveillance capabilities, and she'd need that to get to the important stuff later on. Finding out more about Count Vidian's methods, though, she'd have to do through old-fashioned skulking. He was on Cinda now, she knew. She'd seen him once already from afar, passing through the caverns with a tour group. It was tough to get closer. The transparent crystal columns were pretty to look at, but lousy cover. Darting through an isolated side passage, she thought she'd found a shortcut to get ahead of him. Instead, she found something else.
Halt!
A stormtrooper appeared at the end of the corridor, his blaster raised. Hera stopped in her tracks.
I'm sorry, she said, putting her hand to her chest and exhaling. Oh, you scared me.
Who are you?
I work here, she said, approaching as if nothing was wrong. I may be in the wrong place. It's my first day, she smiled.
Where's your badge?
I forgot.
Dark eyes looked down demurely, then back up.
Can you believe it? My first day.
The stormtrooper studied her for a moment, and then saw the blaster she was wearing. She moved before he did,
delivering a high kick that knocked the blaster from the startled stormtrooper's hands. Seeing his weapon clatter away, he lunged for it. She easily sidestepped him and pivoted, leaping onto the armored man's back. Losing purchase on the crystalline floor, he stumbled, her full weight driving his head into the side wall. His helmet cracked loudly against the surface, and he slumped motionless to the ground.
"Sorry,"
Hera whispered over the fallen trooper's shoulder. "Charm doesn't work on everyone."
Chapter 6.
"Hurry up! Hurry up!"
Skelly looked back in annoyance as Tarler Cho rushed about the cavern, egging workers on. A tall, light-skinned fellow, Tarler was Dalborg Mining's imbecile for Zone 39. Not to be confused with all the other imbeciles managing their firm's efforts in this underground pocket. There were official imbeciles in all the other zones, too, Skelly knew, and not one of them had a whit of sense. All were currently in a tizzy. For hours, arriving workers had reported the Empire spurring them along, even circulating a tale of the Star Destroyer blowing up a freighter captain for slacking. Now word had come through Tarler that the Emperor's top efficiency expert, Count Vidian, would be inspecting. Skelly saw it as deliverance. The top government inspector, coming right to him? Well, not to him, of course, but this was close enough. And better still, it was Demetrius Vidian. A business mogul under the Republic, true, but perhaps the only one Skelly respected. Vidian fed on blundering corporations, profiting from fixing their mistakes. Vidian's famous treatise, "Forget the Old Way," was the only business hollow Skelly owned. If Skelly could get his research to Vidian, the Empire would understand, and it surely had the power to stop what the mining companies were doing. Tarler loomed over him.
"Skelly, get those charges set!"
Skelly simply sighed, then returned his attention to the crystal column he was kneeling beside. Having prepared a suspension of baradium bisulfite in putty, he began caking a ring of the pasty substance all around the stalagmite's base. It was slow, painstaking work, and hard to do neatly when he was irritated at the universe and everyone in it. Kanan, of course. Skelly's mouth still hurt from the man's punch. Who did he think he was? Tarler plagued him, too, along with all his managerial kind. Especially since Dalborg had recently busted him down from explosive supervisor to lowly demolitions placement tech. And most of all, he hated his right hand for being useless and forcing him to do the finely detailed work with his left. He could just bear to look at the fake hand now. It had been curled into a claw most of the time since that terrible day back in the Clone Wars. The Clone Wars were yet another thing to be upset about. Everything about that conflict had been a lie. The Separatists had been this big enemy, and yet when the Empire was declared, they'd melted away, as if at the push of a button. The big corporations had staged the whole thing, Skelly was sure. Wars sold more ships, more weapons, and more medical devices. And in the Clone Wars, even the soldiers on both sides were manufactured goods. The Republic and the Confederacy had been partners in the same corrupt game. The Empire was probably just another iteration of all that, to Skelly's thinking. No more or less immoral. To corporate oligarchs, political allegiances were just another change of clothes. This decade, central rule was in fashion. Something else would come along soon. The beast had to be fed. With lives and limbs on the battlefield, and with the sweat and blood of the workers. The problem was that blowing things up was the only thing Skelly had ever been taught to do. He didn't fault himself for that. He was the product of a system that built only to destroy, as he saw it. He'd learned from the best, and learned well. Everything always came down to that simple list, taught to him during his first day in military demolitions. Pair your ordnance with your initiator. Ignition leads to reaction, leads to detonation. Whether applied to compounds of beradium or its tremendously more powerful isotope, beradium-357, those steps referred to a series of complex reactions that had the same simple result. Now 40, Skelly thought that list also applied to life. You started with a festering problem. Someone initiated a change, the system reacted to that pressure, and then, bang, you had your solution. It had always been his method. He'd been the one to initiate changes whenever possible, starting back on the battlefield. It was why he'd volunteered for everything. Whenever battlements were too dangerous to storm, Skelly risked his life to burrow beneath, planting the explosives that made the decisive opening. He did that and more. But then had come the Battle of Slag's Pit. A foolish charge on behalf of an idiot general, hoping to use demolitions to buy a separatist fortification cheaply. The ground wasn't firm. The explosives were the wrong kind, and Skelly had raised hell about it. No one had listened. No one ever listened. The general had rank. All Skelly could do was enter the breach himself, relying on his innate talent to save the day for his fellow soldiers. It hadn't been good enough. The Clone Wars had ended while he was comatose. He'd later learned that none of his companions had been saved. His hand was another crushing blow. The medical droids had assured the platoon they were carrying all the spare parts necessary for proper battlefield surgery. But they lied. They only had a Klaatuinian prosthetic hand left for Skelly, which had never worked right with his human neurology. Worse, their blundering had damaged his arm to the point where a proper replacement would never work either. Skelly had just stuck a glove on the stupid thing and tried to go on. Poverty had followed. He'd had no choice but to return to demolitions work. And there, he'd only found confirmation for all his beliefs about corporate malfeasance. They were just as careless as the military types. It would have been unbearable had his travels not taken him to Cinda. As someone who had spent much of his time underground, he'd been astonished by the beauty of the moon's caverns. Thoughts that moved too quickly through his head seemed to slow down here. He'd imagined his role a responsible one, for a time. If the moon was going to be exploited anyway, he'd make sure it was done in a cautious manner, protective of the world and the people working on it. Cinda had countless caverns. It was unimaginable to think that corporations could ruin them all. But now, Skelly could imagine exactly that. Cinda would become one more ripped-up place to add to the pile of torn-up lives. The detonator armed, he replaced the applicator in his toolbox. One more stalagmite ready to be decapitated. Rote work and boring, but nicely done. Someone had to care.
"He's over there,"
Skelly heard the supervisor say. He stood up from his work on the stalagmite and turned around. There, being led by Tarler, was a group of four Imperial stormtroopers. Ah, Skelly thought. It seemed soon for the inspector's advanced team to be here, but that didn't matter.
"Hello!"
he shouted, toolbox still clutched in his good-for-little right hand. He saluted with his left. An impulse act. He wasn't part of any military organization, but their armor looked much like that of the clone troopers he'd once served with, and he was glad to see them in any event.
"I'm Skelly. I've been writing to your oversight offices for months."
"What?"
Tarler blurted.
"And I'm glad to see someone's listening."
Skelly looked past the stormtroopers, who continued to march toward him.
Is Count Vidian here?"
The lead trooper stopped and raised his blaster rifle. His companions did the same.
Skelly, you're under arrest.
Skelly laughed nervously.
You're joking. Why?
You're charged with speaking to the detriment of the Empire.
Skelly's eyes widened, and his mind raced.
Wait! Did Kanan report me?
Tarler shook his bald head.
He's all yours. Skelly's always been trouble, and Dalborg Mining doesn't want anyone around that'll upset Count Vidian. Please tell him we cooperated fully.
He looked over at Skelly and spoke acidly.
Looks like I just won the pool. You're fired!
Skelly sputtered.
Wait! This is a mistake! Tarler, you don't have the authority to...
Before he could finish, the stormtroopers began to advance toward him.
Put that toolbox down,
the lead trooper said, just steps away. When the blaster pointed at him and coming his way, Skelly made a decision. His left hand in the air, he crouched.
Okay, fine. I'm doing it. Just give me a second here.
He knelt and grabbed for the remote control he'd left on the ground. He tumbled behind the crystal column he'd been working on and rolled up into a ball, covering his toolbox with his body. Before the stormtroopers could follow, Skelly pressed the button. The baradium bisulfite affixed to the column near Skelly detonated, and the massive diamond-hard cylinder fell forward, exactly the way he'd known it would, away from him and toward the stormtroopers. One screamed loudly, crushed immediately by the base of the fallen column. On striking the surface, the entire structure shattered into dagger-like fragments. Skelly didn't see what happened to the other stormtroopers because he was already up and running. He sprinted into an unlit passage leading from Zone 39 into a service shaft. He knew from memory that it led to ventilation tunnels and other routes, pathways that could take him all over Cinda's underworld. Wheezing as he ran in the dark, Skelly tried to comprehend what had just happened. So someone was listening to his words after all, but they hadn't gotten his meaning.
Fine,
he thought. He recognized the feeling of the toolbox full of explosives still clutched in his immobilized right hand, bouncing against his leg as he ran. It gave him comfort, and he smiled.
There's more than one way to send a message.
Chapter 7. Vidian had never seen corporate hacks scatter so quickly. Since he declared security condition 1, the surveillance operators on Gorse had provided him with the names of 46 potential agitators working in the Sindon mines. Vidian's news that the stormtroopers were making arrests had sent the executives off to alert their employees of the new scrutiny. Other organic beings, for their supposed sentience, were really no better than droids, Vidian thought. They could be made to act according to program.
With the right encouragement, of course.
Flanked by a pair of stormtroopers, the Count glared at the guild chief, the only person left on the tour.
Palfa, your members will name a morale officer in each work crew to ensure the Empire is supported in word and deed.
The director cast his eyes to the ground.
My lord, I don't know how such a program will be received. It's the kind of laborers we attract. Rough characters. It's hard to control what they think.
When they think at all. Drunks and brawlers don't concern me, but they aren't all harmless. Consider this report I've just heard.
Vidian paused to tune his earpiece.
An arrest attempt has been made on your level 39, and the suspect responded by assaulting the troopers.
The director shook his large head.
That's terrible. I'm sure our security personnel have caught him.
They haven't. But my troops will.
Vidian switched off his audible communications long enough to give a command.
There. I've sent your office a copy of my remedial political program. Make sure your member firms adopt it immediately.
Yes, my lord.
Then we continue.
The dejected director led Vidian into a work zone. Like everywhere else, this space was populated by itinerant laborers, beings only slightly more effective than droids. Some passed through with explosives for other chambers. Others stood hip-deep in mounds of shattered crystal, sweating profusely as they shoveled thorolide-containing chips into bins for shipment. Cinda's interior was naturally dry. The light haze on the air was entirely organic perspiration. Vidian was glad his sense of smell no longer existed.
The rabble with the rubble, Vidian thought.
Their kind had been present on countless other production worlds he'd been tasked to straighten out, and they were terrible clay to work with. Even with the troublemakers removed, few could be taught anything new, and their lifestyles outside only served to make them less effective on the job. But they were boundless in number, and that gave him something he could do. He walked into the workers' midst and slapped his metal hands on the backs of one laborer after another.
You, and you.
Each looked up, startled by the cyborg's touch. Human, non-human, their only common trait was their advanced ages.
Too old, too slow.
Ignoring the mix of angry and insulted looks he was getting from the workers, Vidian called back to the guild chief.
Polvar, another directive for your members. New age caps on laborers. Effective immediately.
Polvar spluttered.
But they're still productive.
Vidian turned his soulless eyes toward Polvar.
And you are being unproductive,
he said, stalking toward him.
Your guild is a haven for traitors and loafers.
My lord, perhaps I can suggest some way to...
Vidian didn't wait to hear Polfa's suggestion. His arm lanced out and caught the director by the collar. Yanking downward, he pulled the screaming bureaucrat's cape over his head and forced him to the rocky surface. The stormtroopers watched, blasters drawn, as Vidian rained powerful blows on Polfa's body. The count stepped back, satisfied as the cloth-covered guildmaster's body stopped moving. Vidian looked admiringly at his hands. They still had their sterling shine.
My lord!
One of the stormtroopers said.
Huh?
Vidian looked at the soldier, and then back at the group of workers he'd been standing amid. They were all staring at him.
Industrial accident. Get to work! Unless I told you to get out. Your firms will find more suitable labor for you on Gorse. Unemployment in a strategic resource system is unlawful. The Empire does not tolerate layabouts.
Seeing the wary workers complying, Vidian nodded with satisfaction.
Management, the Imperial way.
It was so much more efficient than under the Republic, and it came to him easily. Firing a manager inspired only the ambitious who wanted to take his or her place. But murder motivated everyone. It belonged in every supervisor's toolkit. He changed his audio channel.
Captain Sloan, are you listening?
From ultimatum, the captain's voice filled his ear.
Affirmative.
Inform Coruscant there is an opening atop the Cinder Mining Guild. I'm sure the Emperor can send us someone appropriate.
Done. Sloan out.
Leaving the stormtroopers to mind the workers as they disposed of the body, Vidian continued his tour alone. In the next chamber, he found another work crew. And while he had no intention of personally going through and identifying every slacker, he couldn't resist when he saw a white-haired man kneeling as he cleaned his pick.
You're definitely too old,
Vidian said, grabbing at the man's collar.
Yeah? Well, you're too ugly,
the man responded before he even turned to see who had accosted him. When he did, he cried out in revulsion.
What are you supposed to be?
Vidian didn't react. He read the old man's badge.
Okadiah Garson.
Not one of the names on the dissident list, but it didn't matter. He was through here.
Stop gawking at me like a fool.
Sorry.
Okadiah pointed to a spot behind the cyborg's ear, where his synth skin didn't completely cover the scar tissue beneath.
It's just, you missed a spot there.
It's not for vanity. It's for the benefit of those who lose efficiency when confronted with the extraordinary.
He tightened his grip on Okadiah's collar and shook.
I find this galaxy already has enough ordinary beings. Maybe you'd like to have your skin removed as well, to see what it's like.
Maybe you should let him go,
a voice said from behind. Vidian looked back to see a dark-haired young man standing with a heavily laden hover cart in the opening to a tunnel. He held a blaster pointed straight at the Count.
Well, well,
Vidian said, not in the least concerned for his safety.
We have a gunslinger. Or perhaps we've found our missing saboteur.
In his travels, Kanan had seen a lot of people with prosthetics. Most were decent individuals using technology to overcome misfortune. But the cyborg that had Okadiah by the collar had really gone to town with it. He looked like a war droid playing a human at a masquerade party.
I'm no saboteur, Kanan said, still holding his weapon. Heard a scream. Sounded like trouble. What's this about?
I am Count Vidian, here for the Emperor, and I am doing his work.
Vidian, seeming totally unconcerned by Kanan's blaster, started to lift the writhing old man by the neck. Kanan fingered the trigger of his weapon. He had no desire whatsoever to tangle with the Empire, much less the top Imperial in the area. He was thankful when another way occurred to him.
There's something you should know.
He lowered his blaster as he trod cautiously onto the work floor.
You're about to mangle the man who knows how to mine Thorolide better than anyone.
Vidian paused.
Doubtful. He can't have the strength to dig or haul much.
He teaches those who do. Moonglow's the most effective producer for its size.
Vidian shook Okadiah for a moment before abruptly dropping him to the cavern floor.
At last, someone who understands what's important. You're fortunate I've already beaten someone else to death today, gunslinger. I have a schedule to keep.
With that, the cyborg abruptly turned and exited with his guards. Kanan holstered his blaster and turned back to check on Okadiah. Being tended to by his fellow miners, the old man rubbed his neck and looked at Kanan.
You always have to poke the Gundark.
Just following your lead, Kanan said.
Yelkin, the miner he tangled with that morning, rolled his eyes at Kanan.
I don't know why you didn't shoot that creep. Someone said he killed the Guildmaster.
I pick who I party with,
Kanan said. He walked back to the hovercart and activated it.
I don't mess with the Empire, and it doesn't mess with me.
Zone 42 awaits, gentlemen, Okadiah said. I want to be done with this day.
Far across the wide chamber, Hera lowered her electrobinoculars. She'd had a bit of luck in the last hour, when all the stormtroopers had left her area. From what she'd been able to overhear, they were all after someone who had violently resisted arrest. She was interested to learn that story, but Vidian had to come first. And so she'd kept following along, trying to find safe places in each cavernous chamber from which to watch. She'd been unable to get within 100 meters, but she'd seen enough to know he was a vile thing, completely worthy of an important station by the Emperor's side. She'd seen both his attack on the poor Guildmaster and how his escort had reacted to it, as if managerial murder was the most normal thing in the galaxy. And she'd seen him harassing the old man moments earlier. It was good luck that the younger guy had come along.
At least someone had a spine. Watching the dark-haired man leaving with his hover cart, Hera felt a moment's impulse to follow him. People with the will to stand up to the Empire were worth knowing. But then she remembered that this wasn't a recruiting trip. She needed to keep after her objective. Maybe next lifetime, pal. Hera slipped down from her perch and took off after Vidian.
Chapter 8. More stormtroopers ran past as Kanan pushed the hover cart down the last tunnel to Zone 42. No doubt they were still looking for the idiot who had flipped out and attacked them in Zone 39. Lal Grolic had popped into the work area long enough to confirm the rumor that it was indeed Skelly on the loose. Kanan wasn't in the least surprised or upset. At least Skelly was out of his hair. It wasn't unusual to see stormtroopers in the Empire, but while he had hopped around some, Kanan's travels through the galaxy had tended toward a spiraling path, moving outward from the galactic center. Core worlds, colony worlds, inner rim, each represented a new frontier for him. And each had turned out the same, with Imperial presence starting at nil and gradually growing. Kanan sometimes wondered how the stormtrooper uniform suppliers kept up with the demand. When the Imperials reached the fringe of the galaxy, what would they be wearing? Not that the sight of stormtroopers alarmed him. No. Like the woman who had spoken to him from the Star Destroyer, they were all functionaries, organic droids, trained to react a certain way and seek out certain targets. Vidian was maybe the most literal expression that he'd seen. All their robotic efficiency and general nastiness bound up in a mass of metal with a little skin on top. The best way to avoid being hassled by them was simply to fit perfectly into the stereotypes they were expecting to find. On worlds like Gorse, the Empire expected to find workers of the sort drawn to low-skill, high-risk jobs. Rowdy and rambunctious characters. Just not rebellious. Threats to their own sobriety and to one another, but never to the Empire. Not politically active or even conscious. It happened that those were the planets Kanan found the most fun. The role of roughneck suited him. He traveled the galaxy looking at the sights, and sometimes the ceiling, after the odd fight or drunken binge. He'd visited more places than he could remember. And beyond Okadaya, he'd never learned the names of most of the people around him. Why bother, when you were just going to leave? Kanan pushed the cart into Zone 42. Deep beneath Cinda's surface, it was the largest chamber yet opened. And more important, sensors had found large recesses hiding behind its walls. Other areas sure to be thick with mineable thorolide. For weeks, various teams had triggered controlled blasts, barely audible over Skelly's objections, trying to get at the rich deposits. In a newly hollowed alcove, Moonglow's techs were working on their own attempt. Kanan parked his cart outside the opening and pounded on the outside wall. "I'm thirsty. Let's get this done." Yelkin appeared from inside the hole, now wearing a white safety vest. He frowned when he saw Kanan.
"You again?"
"You bet."
Aggravated, the Deveronian surveyed the load of explosives.
"We're measuring the length of the borehole for the charge. It should be just a..."
"Wait!"
Someone called from inside the carved-out area.
"There's a problem!"
Kanan sighed as Yelkin hustled back inside. Kanan was about to start offloading the crates himself when he glanced back into the recess. Beside Yelkin, he saw another technician sticking a long prod into a hole drilled for explosives. Or trying to.
"Something's already in there!"
Kanan's eyes widened. And for the first time, he looked down at the ground outside the short tunnel. There was something he'd seen before. Small and brown, discarded nearby.
Skelly's toolbox.
Kanan yelled into the opening.
"Get out! Get out!"
He didn't have to yell a third time. The techs were moving.
Someone's wired something already, Yelkin said in a panic. There's a timer! 30 seconds!
No disarming that.
Forget it!
Kanan yelled.
Go!
Moonglow's demolition techs kept a portable siren in the blast area.